Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Different Strokes for Different Folks, to find common ground and take it to the next level with David Clark here on Blog Talk Radio. Each week, the show will encourage you to keep an open mind and prepare to open the door to new understandings. We will have an exciting array of diverse guests who will point up the fact that we are all spiritual beings having a human experience. Now your host, David Clark.
Welcome to Different Strokes for Different Folks, where we will be finding common ground and taking it to the next level. I'm your host, David Clark. I'm a spiritual adventurer, and I suggest you become the same. This show will encourage you to keep an open mind and prepare to open the door to new understandings. It's my hope that you will come to see that despite our seeming differences, we're all basically the same. This is a no-holds-barred show. My guests will have differing spiritual belief systems, and some will have no spiritual beliefs. You may or you may not agree with things that are said. What I'd ask you to do is keep an open mind. This way, you can see where you can find common ground so that you can relate rather than compare yourself with others. Now, today's guest was supposed to be Catherine Alice, who is the author of Love Will Find You, a best-selling book. She has not shown up in the studio, so we're going to talk, my producer and I, Paula Ganon, and we're going to talk a little bit about spirituality, and I will also talk about 12-step recovery, because that's an important part of my spirituality as a recovering alcoholic and recovering sex addict. And Paula is a Buddhist. So we kind of come at things from a slightly different perspective, but it really is all the same because, as I've said, this show is about finding common ground, and it's all about just the art of allowing whatever is God's will to be. And I think Paula would agree that is what she is trying to do too. How are you, Paula?
I'm good. Yes, I do agree. I love the idea of common ground, because in a Buddhist practice, it is finding the middle way. And my personality has always been striving balance. I've never been an extremist in anything I did, because 30 years ago, I was more conservative on a political level than I am now. I was always in the middle, a little bit to the right. Now I'm in the middle, a little bit to the left. I'm more what I would call a progressive now. So my personality has always strived to, what is the balance here? What is it to where we can find harmony for everything instead of people I've met that they go through extremes. They go through one extremes when they're youth, and they go through, when they reach older age, they go streams. I found it interesting that people who were baby boomers like myself, maybe a little bit older, who were very social active, like the war against Vietnam in civil rights, then as they've gotten older, they move, when they move a little bit to the right, they go to the extreme. So I found it,
well, that's me.
I don't know how you can go... I don't know how you can go from one thing that was hard for my personality to understand. I understand changes, but mine was finding the middle way, trying to find that balance that when we can sit at a table, there's got to be where all of us can work it out so we can have a happy medium, as I call it. I think if you look at sexuality in the United States, that's probably the biggest one, that we go so far one way, and then we come back, we go so far the other way, and that was talked about too on some other shows that I produced, that I find it's like we never can find that nice, healthy middle, for me at least, that's my perspective, on sex. If you go back to the 50s or you look at movies, at how they see sexuality, and then, of course, when I, in the 60s, the sexual revolution, it just went too far the other way, where now kids kind of see it as very casual. Having sex with somebody is like going and getting a drink or something. You know, that's been kind of a conversation, too. I know, how do you feel about that?
Well, as far as the sex thing goes, I think that we live in a very unique society which has historically been rather sexually repressive and very judgmental about sex, kind of putting it in the category of dirty business, if you will. And I see it coming from a puritanical value system where sex was only supposed to be for the purpose of procreation within the context of marriages. And, of course, with the sexual revolution of the 60s, things have changed. In some ways, they haven't. I still see there is a sexually repressive society going on. And on the other side of the pendulum, we have sex in your face all the time in advertisements and so on and so forth. And this creates a problem for people like myself who are recovering from sexual addiction. But I think that what you were saying about the middle ground speaks to me. When I said that I went from one extreme to the other, that had to do in terms of my behavior. I think that I have always been seeking middle ground. Even though I didn't know how to find it, I was kind of an all-or-nothing person, if you will. And I'm just curious as to whether your religious practices have caused your political shift. I was just curious about that.
I don't think so, because as I stated earlier when you interviewed me last Friday, I was raised in the Episcopal Church. So the Episcopal Church is always, and my grandmother said, the middle of the road, so to speak, even though I was raised in a more conservative aspect, which is called the high church. Compared to other denominations, it was pretty mild. And I was, and then also, I'm an Air Force brat, so you're in a military culture. With my dad being in the service, there's a culture unto that that is a tendency of being conservative. And it's not saying it's negative. I'm not saying it's a negative at all. I'm just saying it's what it is. I think, as I stated last time, what happened to me is just my own internal, who is Paula? I was very close to my parents, and I just think it's Paula's journey as to change you're raised, and I'm a late bloomer, so I kind of let go a little bit later than I than a lot of people, and I still am close. But I think what happened when you finally cut the umbilical cord and you do go out on your own away from your parents, because I lived with them for a while, one was out of economic necessity. I couldn't get a girlfriend to move out with me to share an apartment. I had one girlfriend, and I was working. And I was about 23 years old, and I asked her, once I got this job at the bank, I really wanted to move out and have my own place, but I needed to share. I couldn't afford it by myself. And she didn't want to go. She was living with her folks, and I understood that. So I said, well, okay, let's go to Hawaii instead. So we compromised.
Oh, nice.
But our and we went to Hawaii. But to be honest, I would have loved to kind of go out on my own. I mean, I love my parents, have always been supportive. But you do have to kind of go out on your own to know what you're made of or what you really believe. If you're still having your parents' beliefs in you, if you know what I mean. It's still their influence, despite that you're an adult. So
yeah.
I'm a late bloomer.
I think I know what you
and
mean.
I think the change, David, to answer your question, is more of it's an evolutionary step. And it happened, it was in there, and I was telling you the conflicts I was having with dogma of Christianity. It was not Christ's teaching and love and believing in a loving God. I was raised that way. It was just some of the dogma. And, of course, the changing times in the world in the 70s, coming of age of a woman in the 70s with the women's movement, and I was independent. I was not a traditional young girl who wanted, you know, dreamed of the marriage with the two kids and the picket, you know, the white picket fence. That wasn't me. There were so much interesting things out there that I wanted to explore. I wanted to travel. I loved animals. I wanted to be conservation. I got into photography. You know, it's just like, I'm still young. Marriage to me was a very strong commitment, but you had to give up a lot of stuff to do that. I wanted a little more freedom to figure out, I know it sounds corny, but to figure out who I was. I didn't know who I was, really. And,
well, how many people do when they're in their 20s? And, you know, it's a rare person.
Yeah, it is. I did know a couple. I had a girlfriend of mine who got married young, right out of college, knew what she wanted to do. She's a nurse. And I've reconnected to see her now on Facebook, which everybody does. Still married to her high school sweetheart and has two granddaughters. And it's rare. I did find a few, but you're right. Most I know don't. No, or they go through a lot. They go through a lot. They get a degree in this, and their career is completely opposite of what their degree is.
Well, it's interesting. You talked about not wanting the so-called normal existence that a lot of people choose
I think
to
it's traditional.
Experience.
I think it's not just normal. I think
yes.
It's traditional. The traditional one.
Well, I hear you, and I agree with that. For me, normal is kind of a button word because I had wanted to be quote-unquote normal, which, you know, I think a lot of people would view as traditional. But for me, it had to do with the fact that I had a sexuality that I judged as wrong, being a gay person and not being able to accept that. And I very much wanted to get married and to have children in the house with a white picket fence. And that, to me, felt normal, although I'm hearing what you're saying about it being more traditional. So for me, I came to later question what is normal, and I don't think there is any such thing as normal.
No.
And it is about traditions or breaking free of traditions, and I'm interested in exploring your breaking away from Christianity for those that didn't listen to Friday night's show, to explore your path from Christianity to Buddhism. And you talked about the dogma was a problem for you, but I'm wondering what aspects of the love of Jesus and his teachings you have held on to as you've moved into another religious arena.
Well, as I stated last Friday, it was a long journey, too. I really didn't break completely, and I don't think I stated this on Friday, until I was in my early 30s, and I'm 57 now. So it had been a roller coaster ride up to that point that I'd be okay, because I found being Episcopalian is really Anglican Catholic, whether Episcopalians like to think that or not. I went to Mass, and there was a meditation. So I very much enjoyed that because it was a meditation, or there was something about the way it was done that you felt like if during the week you were being beaten up, you could come in and kind of take a deep breath and heal yourself. My mother always, not quite in those words, but that's how she felt. So I did align, but as I grew up, there were a couple incidents in the church I was raised where girls wanted to be acolytes. And of those who don't know what an acolyte, they serve the altar during Mass. Well, it's always been traditionally boys can only do it. And these young women said, well, why can't we do it? you know. So, mm-hmm. and they couldn't. So those things started to kind of creep in. As I said, it took a long time for me to do it. It was more of when I did cut the umbilical cord and came to Los Angeles and be on my own, which was I was late bloomer, as I stated. It's interesting how certain things came to the coming to the surface and discovering the problems I have. What I realized after reading the Bible is what I loved was Christ's teachings. Trying to follow in his footsteps, which is I believed what he believed was equality, was love, compassion, not dog-eat-dog world, mm-hmm. a vengeful vindictiveness. I was raised that way in the Episcopal Church, and I started to believe that, in my visions, he would come and talk to religion with women. There's still a feeling, and a lot of it has to do with a divided world, that we put ourselves divided of race, ethnicity, sexual orientation, such as what she went through, and also gender, that it is a man's world and a woman's world. Well, I wanted mm-hmm. a world of equality where you're judged by your content, of your character. I don't want the patriarchal world anymore. So I think a lot of the spirituals, I said, want something in my life that is not patriarchal, that has started to go. And Christ's teachings to me and just how he lived his life, what he wanted us to strive for in this life, which is not easy to do. It's hard to forgive, especially when you're wrong. And I struggle with that. I've had conversations with that, too. I agree with it. That's what I want to strive. It just isn't easy in a human body sometimes when you're wronged. And there are some people that do it incredible. But a lot of it is still, as I stated on Friday, with the Lord's Prayer, which is Our Father, I don't see God as a man, nor do I see it as a woman. I see it as a life force that's energy,
I agree.
You know, that's in us, you know, like we had talked about earlier, that it's in us. And this Nietzschean Buddhism practice is more aligned with now how I've evolved my spirituality, because the teachings of Buddhism is aligned with Christ. And some Buddhists believe, and some people, not just Buddhists, but believe that he was in India and learned. I've seen a couple. It's interesting. I'm not saying it's true, but it's interesting, and it isn't far-fetched. He could travel in his time through the Silk Road to India because they're so parallel. And there's been in Living Buddhism, which is the magazine we have, when I first started the practice, they had articles on Christ, on his teachings and what they felt he was, which is a spiritual being. So there's no conflict. And I like this particular practice because it's laity, and it is about the true heart of practicing is equality. You know, it is humanism more than dividing itself. So what I've kept with the Christianity that I love, what Christ, I believe, meant us to do is to develop a world of tolerance, compassion, and stopping the labeling. Growing up, mm-hmm. Christ, you know, I believe, and if I'm wrong, you can tell me this, is, you know, I'm no longer a child, so therefore I put childish things away. And I think to follow his path and his spiritual, what he wants to do, does take a lot of growing up. It's to do. You have to take I believe as teachers, you take responsible for your life. It's in that, and that's what I took away. The Christianity is that compassion and that. But I thought what was missing was equality for everybody. What I thought was missing is that Christianity has tendency in its traditional dogma to also scorn nature. That's why our environment is so screwed up. It has a tendency of not believing that anything that's natural is a sin, you know, that nature and all of that is a sin. And I don't, you know, I think we're all aligned. And, of course, the history, its attitude, it had us a dark side to it and its history, and that's not Christ's teachings. But it's come up, and my problem is many of Christian denominations as an organized religion hasn't really confronted their sins as an institution. And
right.
women, although
right.
women are one of the loyalists, they've treated, you know, it's a very dark, bloody history. And they really need to confront it and admit it and then let go and then really follow Christ's teachings. Some, you know, the Unity Church to me that you belong to sounds exactly what that, but there's a lot of them out there, especially the extremists, that still kind of cave into the Old Testament, which that's not Christ's teachings at all.
No, it has very little meaning for me, the Old Testament.
Yeah.
You know, aside, there are passages in it that are beautiful. I love Proverbs, I love a lot of the Psalms. And it's not to say that there isn't good stuff in it, but there is this picture of a punitive God, of warring people, of judgment and damnation, if you will. And I don't think any of that comes through with Jesus' teachings. You've raised a lot of interesting points. Now, the one thing that I totally resonated with was the idea that the God force is within us, but I also believe it's all around us. And I don't know that really came through in Jesus' teachings. And I think that's where I think that's missing and an important aspect for us to consider when we are looking at things like the environment. And you're right about unity aligning itself very much with Jesus' teachings. They refer to themselves as practical Christianity, and the gist of it is to not just pay lip service to Jesus' teachings, but to put those principles of love and consciousness and compassion and tolerance, as you mentioned, into our daily practice in our lives and to lead upright lives and to not judge, to not focus on the concept of sin, but to look at it as the fact that we are divine creatures who are having a human experience, and part of being human, a big part of being human, is that we make mistakes. And so unity would redefine sin as missing the mark, and I like that very much because it does not have that, it's not laden with judgment, you know, so I like that.
I was just going to say,
I don't look at myself as a sinner. I look at myself as a human being who's learning, you know, and I learn a lot from my mistakes, hopefully.
Yeah. It's like the one thing that really bothered me, and it wasn't really so much in the Episcopal Church, but there's still that connotation in Christianity of this perfection, even in our society, to be perfect. And to be perfection, well, number one, what does that mean? And number two is, to me, it's an illusion because you can't really, you learn from your mistakes. That's how you grow, is making mistakes and figuring it out. So perfect, I think, what is it? It's a ridiculous thing. People are going to fall off that pedestal. And instead of accepting, you know, instead of accepting, well, they're human, so you're going to make mistakes. You make mistakes every day. Every day you're right, and every day you're wrong, depending on what it is, you know. But that doesn't make you less human. You try to do the best you can every day. I think I'd rather see people work hard on spiritual enlightenment than working better. And I also think the problem I have sometimes when people who go to church, they're good at ritual. But the minute they walk out of that church, it's like, okay, what are you going to do? What are you going to do when you get out of the church? Sometimes they go and break all 10 commandments, thinking that if they just go to church, it's okay. To me, deeds are very important.
Right.
That's why we haven't really moved forward, to me. And I think that's sometimes why I didn't want to condemn people or church. I saw people go to church some really good Christians who are very compassionate, and then some are incredibly judgmental. But again, it goes back to the balance. I think ritual is important, but if it's more ritual than actually walking the talk, as I call it, because Christ walked the talk, it's meaningless.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We're not going to move forward. We're not going to move beyond this constant conflict and combativeness that we have. And we have very, very serious issues, and we need to talk civilized, as adults. And sometimes I hear people all over Christians, and I yell at the TV, well, then I wish to God you act like it, because they're very simple. They're very in your face. They don't respect anybody else's belief. Their history is all off, and I don't think they really know what's in the Bible. They'll pull it out of context, and then you go, okay, well, did you read on a little bit?
Right.
So you do have to really confront them on their stuff, too.
That's always been a real challenge for me. People such as the ones that you're talking about that don't practice what they preach, that seem to have missed some of the key points of Jesus' teachings, and who focus on things like judgment. And the catch-22 for me is that it's very easy for my ego to get caught up in a place of judging them. And ego is saying is that I'm right and you're wrong. And I need to recognize that perhaps these are just misguided people. And it's not to say that they don't have some good things to say, but I take what I need and leave the rest behind. And it also goes back to what you were saying about perfectionism and how it is an illusion, because a lot of these people, and a lot of people, period, think that they are perfect. And perfectionism is such a trap. It's been such a trap for me in terms of coming to deal with my addictions and wanting to do things perfectly and recognizing that in this human existence, that's not likely to happen. I'm not likely to become an illuminated being like Jesus was. And very few people are like Buddha or perhaps Muhammad. It is an illusion, and it's a dangerous trap to fall into, and a lot of people do.
Well, I think it's also when people say, I want it perfect. It's all perspective. Well, what's perfect for them is it's their way. That's what perfection is.
And what's perfect for them isn't going to be perfect for me.
Yeah, right. I've seen that with people. Well, I want it perfect. And then people will do this task that they ask them to do. Well, that's not it. And then you come to find out that, what it is that it's their way. What they see perfect is it's done their way. Anybody else doing it is not perfect. So it's all relative, basically, is what I see. Well, what's perfect to you isn't perfect to me. what I'm satisfied with isn't going to be the same thing as you. It's just, that's why it's, with art and everything, it's so subjective. In that, or the fighting, I think we can even go beyond spirituality of the religious freedom that has been a struggle, is the fact of egos and believing that my God or my interpretation of God is not yours, therefore it's superior. It's not just that, it's also the difficulty of freedom of speech. You know, we have it in our Constitution, and it can be a bit tricky, but freedom of speech doesn't mean I agree with you. I mean, it doesn't mean you've got to agree with me. It means that you've got to respect, Thomas Jefferson said, you've got to respect what a person is saying, even if it makes your blood boil. That's not easy to do either, and it can be a fine line. So it is an ongoing, what I mean with a perfectionist, an ongoing that we have to work at everything to hit that belief that we want. You know, I do too. My ego gets in the way. I can hold a grudge. Well, that's not what Christ was talking about. And I know he's talking right to someone else. It seems to be, it's easier for us to kind of go into that eye for an eye than to forgive. I think what Christ taught and what our founding fathers for the Constitution of freedom of speech and freedom of religion is a very difficult thing for people to do because of egos and believing that what their culture is, what their culture is or what their tribe is the center of the universe. And we do have dealing with our egos is really the biggest one to deal with, because I struggle with it.
And
too.
I think what it comes down to is detachment. I think that Christ teaches the principle of detachment with love, and that's a good way to let go of judgment, to love your neighbor as you would love yourself, in spite of whatever differences you may perceive them to have. Right. Or you to have with them. And it's also an interesting notion that I've discovered that principle used in one of the 12-step programs I go to, and that's Al-Anon. And in that context, it has to do with the family member of an alcoholic detaching from the problem of the alcoholic and treating them with love instead of treating them with judgment. Not to say that tough love couldn't be practiced. In other words, giving somebody an ultimatum and sticking to it. If you're going to keep destroying yourself, then you're going to have to leave my life. That would be an example of tough love. But it's not saying you're a bad person or harping on why can't you stop doing this, that kind of thing. So I would like to take a short break, and when we come back, perhaps talk about the difference between spirituality and religion, which I think is always an interesting topic. And I would like to run the advertisement for my book, which is about a sex addict who does come into recovery, and perhaps we can talk a little bit about 12-step recovery too, because that is an important part of my spirituality.
Prepare to be shocked. Prepare to be moved. Prepare to laugh. Prepare to cry. And prepare to be inspired. Dive into David Clark's latest book, Shades of Gay, and you will find yourself plunged into the trenches of sexual addiction. You will embark upon a kaleidoscopic tour from the abyss to higher ground. In the beginning, it was love at first sight when Daniel and Mark met, but through the years, that same love became tainted. Daniel, an alcoholic and sex addict, has found himself unable to resist the lure of other men. When Mark discovers his infidelity, he leaves Daniel, who begins a dark descent into sexual tryst after tryst. Shades of Gay reveals the myriad desires a lost man can permit his body and soul to revel in, despite the pain they bring. But can such fleeting moments of pleasure bring meaning to life? Will Daniel realize the love he had with Mark is worth more than the sweat spent in other men's beds?
And I think that concept of fleeting moments of pleasure is something that all addiction has in common, no matter what it is. And, you know, a lot of people, when you talk about addiction, they just think about drugs and alcohol. But there are a lot of process addictions, like gambling, like sex, even food, which in a sense is a chemical. And all of these addictions produce endorphins in the brain, releases dopamine, which is very powerful. And so there is a chemical byproduct that's inherent in the body. But I think that all addicts are basically searching to fill that void within themselves that only God can fill. And that's where spirituality comes in. And for a lot of people, whether they're addicts or not, because of whatever problems they faced with religion in the past, that's become a real stumbling block for them. And I think it's important for people to get past notions of religious abuse or wrong teachings, if you will, and recognize that they are divine beings and that there is a pathway to God, that there are, I believe there are many pathways to God, and that people who say there's only one way, that unless you accept Jesus Christ as your Savior, you're going to be damned, I think that they are wrong. And, you know, to me, that's not a spiritual aspect. And I wish I could remember what I've heard some people say to describe the difference between religion and spirituality. I think that religion is only aligned with spirituality when a person can open their mind and their heart and accept truth that resonates with them, and then it can serve their soul. Otherwise, it comes down to the dogma that you were talking about, Paula, I think. What do you think?
Yeah, that's good. I've heard some really interesting differences when this question was asked, and I wish I had written them down on what people want to give a really good definition. I guess from my definition, being raised both, is religion is organized in structure and is ritualistic, which is not a negative. But what happens with it is it becomes institutional. It becomes an institution. And what I see sometimes from my definition is religion, most people are in a specific dogma. I think with spirituality, both what's in common with religion and spirituality, and again, this is my definition, my perspective, is they're both looking beyond something far greater than themselves, that logic is not enough, that there is something beyond the physical world or this existence in these bodies that sometimes rational does not answer the problems or guide you. You know, faith. When all logic goes, faith is sometimes what's left, that you have to have reason. Our founding father says you have to have reason and faith side by side. I think the difference for me is that spirituality is a person that's a little more open to learning, that I seek truth in the sense of, I don't know if I can explain. When I was raised in the Episcopal Church, it was a good foundation for me to start on my spiritual journey. As I grew up and I started to explore and read and have an open mind to different ideas, I like interesting things. I'm kind of an explorer, but not climbing mountains, but knowledge or cultures or science or whatever it is. As I grew up, the Episcopal Church or the dogma that were these Christian religions did not go far enough for me, for what I was going inside. Because there's so many different aspects. And we've got a lot of knowledge of how there were different sects of Christianity at the time after Christ's crucifixion. You had the Gnostics. You had very different Christian. There's so many Christian sects that looked at it interesting different. And then it became organized and it shut anybody down who said, well, I don't see it that way, that there may have been a mysticism involved. So I think when I look at people who are religion, they get so stuck in the dogma that they really do not to seek other things, open their mind to other possibilities. So I think people who say they're spiritual believe in something far greater, but I'm open to listen to other ideas, or open that there is not one answer. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. Absolutely. One other thing that I wanted to talk about was we referred earlier to ego, and ego is something based on fear, and spirit is something that's based on love and all those aspects of love. And I've heard it said by Anthony DeMello, who was a Jesuit from India. Presumably he grew up in the Hindu tradition, I don't know, but he did become a Jesuit at 16. And he said that they're just two states, fear and love. And I've gone on to study The Course in Miracles, which talks about ego and spirit, which, of course, I am portraying as fear versus love. And so it's very interesting to see how we can, as humans, become trapped by the ego and forget spiritual centers, which can be what can guide us. And it can be something as simple as a sense of morality. It can be our conscience. It can be some of the things we might have learned, like love your neighbor instead of as you would have them love you. All of these things. But how do you see the ego as a trap?
Oh, that's an interesting question. Ego as a... I think a lot of the things you hit on, I think the ego... In a trap, you talked about fear and love, the fear versus if you're, one is fear, the other is love. The ego, I guess, and I could be wrong, I only had a couple units in psychology. A lot of it pertains to the survival mode, a primitive survival mode to our ancient ancestor of either fleeing or running. I think sometimes people's egos, if you get attacked and for some reason if somebody tells you you're wrong, our hair goes up. What do you mean you're wrong? What do you mean I'm wrong? I think there's a survivor instinct in there to protect us rather than admitting. There just seems to be, this is just my observation of supposedly adults who can't admit, there's still a problem of scapegoating, of not taking responsibility for your life. When you make a mistake, you've got to own up to it. There's still that little child that's coming up with 5,000 excuses as to what happened, and not one is rational. So I think that the ego, at least my, kind of goes back to that, is as a defense mechanism. There's something there that says to us, no, I'm not wrong. If I'm wrong, then it's threatening my survival. Does that make sense to you? I mean, sometimes
it does
I
make
think
sense.
Because we still have, people still have a problem not accepting responsibility for their actions. If it goes good, great. If it goes bad, then I have 5,000 excuses. You still have scapegoats. You still listen to commentators talking about our problems in this country caused they'll look outside themselves, the immigrants, or, you know, if they don't look like me, or gay people, you know, whatever it is that isn't, that is not, that doesn't fit their tribe, if there's something wrong, we got to blame it on people that we don't like, or we don't understand, or we don't accept for who they are. Instead of saying, you know, our problems are caused by ourselves. If you really dig deep and look at all the problems that this country has, a large percentage, 99 probably percent, is it's by our hand. And we always look for scapegoats. There's always seems to be people that, well, who caused this problem? Well, when you look in, I mean, from the 12-step program, David, that I understand is, isn't the first step is admitting, number one, you're an alcoholic? Isn't that
yes,
why it's that?
Yes, you're powerless.
That.
You're powerless
right.
over it, and that your life has been made unmanageable.
Right.
Yeah.
But I think
and the ultimate goal, the ultimate goal of the 12-step program is to take responsibility for yourself. And I think that, you know, when you're talking about scapegoats and trying to pin the blame on somebody else, you're not taking responsibility for yourself. And I think that that's an important aspect of spirituality, is doing just that.
Yeah, because my practice, as I stated last Friday, in Ancient Buddhism, is you're the writer of your life. You are responsible of... You know, you got to take things into action. So it is very much taking responsibility for your life as things, and then whatever comes at you is to overcome it, to look at what happened, and see you can overcome it. And I think the ego, there's something about the ego. At least that's my perception. That's like it can't accept when somebody says, "Well, you're wrong." What do you mean I'm wrong? The ego is saying, I'm always right, because it's a defense. You know, that's at least my interpretation, I think, is the trap that you were saying. I know that's a long dissertation, but it was such an interesting question. I think sometimes that's how I feel, is the problem. There's too much scapegoating and not taking responsibility and blaming people who are not, that are different than what you are. So you blame him.
Now, that's another subject. That's an interesting subject, because it's so easy to fall into the trap of comparing yourselves with others. And again, that gets into an ego place of, you know, I'm right and you're wrong. I think it's so important as part of our human experience to embrace the diverse tapestry of our mutual experiences and the beautiful, beautiful tapestry that we weave when we can accept that everybody's here for a reason, everybody can teach us something, that everybody is entitled to their own viewpoints, and that difference is to be celebrated, not to be criticized or condemned.
Yeah, I think it's, if you're raised in diversity, it's good at being raised. If people live in, are raised into too much homogenous and diversity comes in, they get a little paranoid and fear that I've noticed a little bit. And what is good about, great about the technology is more and more there's integration. You know, everybody in our country with the separation, supposed to be separate but equal, which we know was a bunch of hooey, with the Jim Crow law, it's not. Those segregation just builds walls. That's all it does. You've got to know, oh, that looks interesting. I'd like to find out. You know, the interesting thing, Dave, we talk about spirituality is that God is everything and everywhere and made everything. So if God made everything, he made the diversity, if you say he or whatever, however you portray God. So God made everything. Logic, that wouldn't that mean that God made diversity?
Yes.
We would be diverse.
And just look at
why
nature.
Why are you going against the diversity when it's what God made? So you're going against God in many ways.
And why would anybody go against the diversity of people when they just take a look at the diversity that's present in nature? I mean, diversity is everywhere present, so why shouldn't it be present in people?
Yeah, yeah. I don't know why there's always been that division or they can't see that through the years, but I think with modern technology in the world, it's getting more like a global village, I think is a great idea. That's why I like living in the Los Angeles area or any area that has a diversity, because in my Buddhist practice, being in LA, we have everybody from every walk of life. That's the first thing I noticed. Mm-hmm. And women are very much, it is about equality. I think the interesting thing that I saw one time was documentary, I got the intel of it, on genetics, that now they're so good at DNA, they can trace your DNA 12 generations or more. So what they did is they took two people. One was a woman who was an American who had Greek ancestry, and they took a full-blooded, I think he was Navajo, American Indian, Native American, and they took a swab from their cheek and they did a DNA test. They found out they had a common ancestor. So the young woman said, it proves we are one family. I always consider the human race, and this is the way we kind of look in my practice, is one race. We're just different branches, but we're human. it's the skin color has to do with adapting to the environment is basically what it is. We're all linked to really the mitochondria of one female.
Right.
Is what they're saying everything to go back to. So we're all one family. So we're really just one race with all these lovely, fascinating branches. That's how I see it. And that's the way we need to start telling people to see it.
Yes, absolutely.
Like
that's how I see it, too.
Yeah.
We're right and they're wrong.
So we're
but,
wrong.
You know, the thing is... I don't know. I've written, my most recent book is called Telling It Like It Is. And I think that to me what that is speaking my own truth. Whether or not it can be accepted by somebody else, it doesn't matter. And I'm not here to try to change other people from their own opinions. But I do believe in the notion of planting seeds. And if the ground is fertile, the seed is planted, it will sprout. And if it's not fertile, it's not going to take hold. But I do believe in speaking my own truth. After years of remaining silent for whatever reason, basically because I was filled with shame, I think that if I can hear other people speaking their truth and keep an open mind, sometimes I can gain new perspectives myself, and I think that's a beautiful thing.
Yes, yeah, that is. I think it goes back. It does that ego does come in, doesn't it? When we're in conversation.
Oh, it's God, yes.
Popping right back in, doesn't it?
You
know? it is a constant. I think what you said is that hit to me that. You can't change. I'm not here to change anybody or to convince you what I think. And I think that's a great way to live is that, you know, this is what I believe and this is what I hold. If that's what you had, I respect it. I don't agree with it, but I respect it. That still is it difficult to do because I think there's certain things depending on what it is that's very passionate, if you get into politics and you get into people's affecting people's lives, that's where it gets hard to find that common ground because people get very passionate with it. And when you try to debate religion, if someone doesn't want to listen and say, well, wait a minute, can we talk a little bit about this? What did Christ say? You know, you're a very angry person, you're this. What did Christ say about compassion and everything? You know, sometimes you must be talking to a wall when I
yeah.
debate. But, I think it is still something that you have to practice both inside and then working with people. I know I get impatient with people, and I need not to. But you feel like you want to accomplish something and you don't know how to reach if they're not listening to you. I think that's the hardest thing is when they're not willing to listen or to listen from your point of view. How am I going to approach it? A lot of in our Buddhist practice, we talk about experiences how even though we chant, those egos getting, well, what's wrong with them? Why don't, and then we start thinking, well, we need to think about where are they coming from? You know, we have to always constantly think, well, where are they coming from? It's kind of funny that you brought that up, yeah, because as hard as we do, that ego starts popping in and go, why can't they see that I'm right? even if we really
right.
stand hard, it's still popping
uh-huh.
in.
Uh-huh.
We have to do a little self evaluation, going, well, you know, the practice is about how to really dialogue with person, especially when you're in conflict.
Well, this has been a very interesting hour, in spite of the fact that our guest was not able to be with us. And I thank you for sharing with me, Paula. It's been very illuminating. It's always nice to share philosophies and ideas with you. I have received communication from Catherine Alice, who is on the West Coast and was confused about the time difference. So she's asked to be rescheduled, and I've rescheduled her for May 1st. And tomorrow night, speaking of Christians, I have a Catholic person who very much exemplifies the lifestyle of Jesus. He runs a hospice for today's lepers, people dying from AIDS. And so I'm going to be talking with Michael DeSalvo tomorrow night at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. And with that said, I think we're going to close. So thank you again, Paula. I really appreciate your willingness.
I enjoyed it, and I learned a lot from what you were talking about. Put it to heart.
Likewise.
So thank you so much. Okay. Take care.
You're welcome. So once again, we come to a close. Now we can pause and reflect upon the idea that we are all united through the diverse tapestry of our individual gifts. There is no real thing of separation except in our own minds. We are each unique expressions of the ultimate source of our beings. We are spiritual beings having a human experience who are having a spiritual experience. Have a great week, and remember, whatever you dream, you can realize.
You have been listening to Different Strokes for Different Folks. To find common ground and take it to the next level, here on Blog Talk Radio with David Clark, every Friday at 7:30 p.m. Eastern. You can listen to this broadcast again on srbroadcasting.com.